So making an estimate of all the parameters that we spoke of. So we spoke of cost, we spoke of time, we spoke of quality, we spoke of resources, we spoke of the risks involved, and also in terms of the overall scope. So are all the estimation parameters available to you to make an accurate estimate is something that is that has to be dealt with the utmost care. Of all these estimates that we looked at, or all the parameters, is there ambiguity that needs to be resolved? The whole idea is to move from the area of unknowns to the area of knowns, so that all the parameters give you the right kind of estimates that are needed. In a sense, all the six of these project estimates are kind of interconnected. So if you see here, unless you have a clearly stated business objectives in the scope document, you cannot allocate the resources. Unless you do the resource allocation, you cannot derive a cost out of it. Unless you have the scope of work and the resources and the cost, you cannot define the timelines, because you would want to allocate certain high critical resources during certain phase, certain low critical resources during other phases. So you cannot arrive at a timeline unless you have all of these. And unless you account for the risks, which is the inherent thread that binds everything, you cannot arrive at the total project timelines. Keeping an eye on the quality of work that gets delivered, which was promised as envisioned, is of utmost relevance here. So in a sense, all of these project estimates are kind of interconnected. Quality estimates will impact your other estimates of, say, things like cost, time, scope, resources, etc., etc. So at the end of the day, you would want a quality outcome of something that was scoped, that was decided at a particular cost, with a particular time, with certain assumptions of the risks, with the right kind of resources that are put into the project. Yeah, I know this is a little difficult to understand, but think of it as an interwoven thread that links all the six parameters together. Having looked at the different parameters that impact estimate in terms of cost, in terms of time, in terms of scope, in terms of risk, and in terms of quality, let us look at some of the estimation techniques. So there are various techniques, and it can be broadly classified into four different techniques here. First is an analogous estimate. Second is a parametric estimate. Third is bottoms-up estimate. And fourth is estimation by simulation. So these are critical ones to understand. So let us spend time and deep dive into each of these. We start with the analogous estimates. So the analogous estimate approach uses the actual duration and the cost of a previous project of similar type as the basis for estimating the current project. So assuming that a company or organization would have deployed, say, a SAP module, which is about material management for, say, a company X. So they would use the same project tools, the same timelines, and the same a similar scope, not the same scope, but a similar scope to guesstimate the estimation for the current project as well. Industry standards as well as historic information obtained from organizations are widely used in this particular approach. So this heavily relies on the top-level activities for WBS, that is work breakdown structure, and is often termed as a top-down approach. So in this analogous estimation, I think the critical point to note here is that suppose if similar activities have been done in the past, what are the learnings from these activities which can be incorporated in the particular estimate? So that is what it aims at. A particular implementation of SAP module or a ERP package that was done for one particular organization, how can it be replicated? So this is the most common practice that we would use. In fact, even from our perspective, right, as humans, our learning curve increase as in when we get this repeatable scope. So assuming that you are filing your income tax returns, so for the first time you would have done or researched ways in which it has to be done, and next time what you would do is you would kind of have a guesstimate of what the previous work was and then incorporate the same in this year's estimate. So this is what you mean by analogous estimation. This approach is used to estimate during the early stages of the project planning. So at a very high level, you would say, okay, the SAP material management module for a company like SEAT, and I'm just taking the names, SEAT as a tire manufacturer took the material management of SAP, maybe it took them 14 weeks to deploy. So if MRF were to deploy, say, the same SAP material management course, then the project manager would just go ahead and say that, okay, it'll take 14 weeks as well. So in this case, where there is very little information available, because the project has just been awarded or it's still in the bidding phase, etc., you would set up a very tentative timeline basis the past experience. So this is a preferred approach for estimating implementations, as I mentioned, of standard package softwares like a ERP, that is an enterprise resource planning tool, something like a SAP, or even say with some vendors like Salesforce.com, where you have certain pre-packaged offerings, and then on top of these pre-packaged offerings, there are customizations done. So software vendors would give a tentative timeline saying that one particular implementation maybe took 100 days. You take the same base as 100 days for the new deployment as well. And you use this to estimate the project timelines. System integrators or consulting companies engage in similar industry can very quickly assess and create a project estimate basis this approach, right? So needless to say, experience, learning curve of one particular project would be easily replicable in the same templatized format for the other project as well. Very commonly seen in the industry as far as ERP packages are concerned, implementation of CRM systems, implementation for data warehousing solutions of similar kinds. So where the business use cases are more or less established, and it's a question of replicating it from one customer to another customer, and that's where a lot of these consulting companies, a lot of the system integrators work with the end customers. Again, maybe just giving you the similar example, if say IFRS 9 deployment has happened for one bank which took say 45 weeks, correct? A similar baseline can be set for a bank of similar nature using the same packages. So again, a very common practice for the consulting giants, the big fours, maybe companies like PwC or KPMG, to do this benchmarking, because they would have worked on projects of similar nature, customers on similar nature, and replicating it within the same industry. Estimates obtained using this approach are quick and less expensive, right? Because there is not a lot of effort that is being spent, but the accuracy of project estimates also vary to a great extent. Because there was some work done for one customer, which can be used as a base for other customer, but it would also entail that a lot of customization can happen. So although it's good to use this as a starting point or as a base reference, things can change a lot. The second estimation technique is the parametric estimation. So in case of a parametric modeling or a parametric estimation, mathematical parameters are employed to predict the overall project cost. Common examples in this case would be maybe if we look at the construction industry, where the costs are established in terms of, say, the per square feet rate. So so you can do this similar exercise. Maybe if you go to, say, google.com and type a small query saying that what is the cost of renovating my house. So in this case, there could be certain websites, say homelean.com or some others. I'm not very particular about the names, but the approach is that these vendors might be able to give you a ballpark rate basis some of the established rates in the market. So say renovation per square feet, X amount of rupees per square feet. Now this is a very wide assumption that they would have taken in the industry. Pros and cons of this particular estimation techniques are pretty much there, but a very quick cost estimates are created using this particular approach, which is acceptable in certain industries. Again, I gave you an example of the construction industry, right? Suppose if you have to build a house from scratch, you've got a plot. So typically, maybe the construction companies give you a price per square feet, so that it becomes easy for you to estimate what would be the overall spend on this. So this is the kind of parametric estimation which uses these mathematical models. If we take this concept to the software industry, especially in the software development projects, which are greenfield in nature, there are models developed that use the distinct adjustment factors to arrive at the cost estimates. Each of these factors have multiple points to fine-tune, as I said, because these are very basic base estimates, and then they have to be fine-tuned as per the particular project, fine-tuned for the particular nature of work, basis, say the exact technology, basis the geography, basis the quality of the resources, basis the skill set, and more importantly, the mindset of the top management. So again, it's like saying you get an estimate of, say, constructing a house, which is maybe X rupees per square feet. But then this is subject to change if you are, say, constructing a house in a hilly terrain versus a soil which is loosely coupled, correct? But nonetheless, these serve as starting points. Obviously, this doesn't need any explanation that the cost and the accuracy of the parametric estimates will vary widely, right? Something that is being established as a base for one particular project or nature of work might be changed or might be subject to customization basis, say the nature of work. The third is the bottoms-up estimation. Now, in this approach, we start looking at the bottom most level, as the name suggests, or the lowest level, and then work your way towards the top. So for every work package, we first look at the time, the resources, and the cost from the bottom row itself, and then summarize these costs as we move upwards to reach the overall project scope. So if you recollect the WBS or the work-based structure, where you start with, say, the work packages, and then you start allocating the cost for the individual tasks, right? So summing up the cost of the individual task, you make your way towards the work packages, and then from the work packages, you make your way towards the elements, so level one elements. Summing up the cost of all the level one elements, you arrive at the final project cost. So this is a bottom-up approach that we are talking about. As you would have understood, in this bottom-up approach, it's absolutely detail-oriented. So you need to have a view of all the activities that would be involved. It consumes a lot of time, and a lot of cost is also involved to do this estimate. And there is a reason for it, because this particular estimation technique assumes that you've had complete knowledge of the entire scope of work, which would not change. Because of this, you would then list down all the activities, then you allocate the resource to those activities, then you allocate the cost and the timelines with these activities. So unless you have a firm view on the different activities, you might not be able to arrive at a fairly accurate estimate. So because this is a bottoms-up estimate, where you start with the lowermost layer and then you make your way towards the top, the cost of estimation here is very high, because it's absolutely detail oriented. And although this approach provides the most accurate and the most realistic project estimates, because this assumes that you have a cost allocated to the activities and then you are moving up from the bottom to the top, where you collate all the costs, it's actually a lot time consuming. And it also assumes that the project would remain kind of static in nature, you have very little unknowns at the start of the estimation period. So some of the guidelines for estimations: in order to create realistic and achievable project estimates, there are a few guidelines which we will explore. So these guidelines or principles are generic in nature, and which can be used widely by all project planners. These guidelines form the core basis of estimation and can be further modified to adopt to the specific industry. So just gave it the example of the tire manufacturing industry, right? So the estimation techniques that might be applicable to, say, the tire manufacturer might not really apply to the paint manufacturer, correct? So it might be good to use those as a starting point, but then it'll have to be fine-tuned look at the actual nature of work to suit the particular industry segment, look at the geography segment, look at the actual technology that gets deployed, and the actual nature of work, which is more project specific requirement. So now let us look at some of the guiding principles. So the first guiding principle says and talks about the ownership of these estimates. The ownership rule, or the ownership of estimates rule, indicates that those project team members responsible for the specific project results should create the estimate for the part for which they will be held accountable. As the name suggests, it talks about ownership. So members, or the team members who are allocated that responsibility, They are the owners for creating those estimates, and they would be held accountable for the estimates that they provide. If it is not feasible, then the members should be held accountable for a review of the estimates as well. So because the estimates are created by these people, and that's where the entire guiding principle of giving the ownership, making people more accountable and responsible for what they are estimating. Here you look at people like domain specialists, domain consultants, practitioners who have been working in the industry segment, in the market, subject matter experts who know the specific content of what needs to be developed. So then the project manager would get the work products or the work packages from these subject matter experts, and the project manager here acts as a generalist. So because these are specialist jobs which are or specialist estimates which are given by the subject matter experts or the domain consultants, the project manager would heavily rely on the output of these from the domain consultants. If the project manager is doubtful about the initial project estimate, then he or she can basically take the inputs from these specialists, because these are specialists who would have worked in the industry, who would have gained experience, and basis their experience of working on, say, past projects in the similar industry, they would have developed this estimate, which then gets passed on to the project manager. And hence, the project manager should actually trust the estimate that he receives from them. Okay, so as we saw, the role of the domain consultants, the functional experts, the subject matter experts is absolutely important. Active participation by the team members ensures that the ownership gets delivered. So help so make people accountable in case the project manager doesn't have a view of the different activities. Make the SMEs, domain experts, functional consultants, give the power to them to make them more accountable, and then have the ownership transferred to them. A early contribution in the planning process or participation in the review of estimates ensures that the project team remains loyal to the overall objectives of the project, and thereby increases the success of the project. When work packages are not assigned to the specific teams, or when such participation is not possible, then project planners should assume the work group's average productivity and performance. So this is the key. there might be certain resources who would be really good at their jobs, and maybe say able to do the work in say 10 hours. And there could be a scenario where on an optimistic level, I'm saying they could do the work in 10 hours. But if the project manager is not really, doesn't have the information on the assignment, or have not worked, or doesn't know the skill set of the people, so then in such a scenario, he would just assume the average productivity for the employees, and then build a estimation. Guideline number two, it says level of detail. The level of detail rule is based on the fact that smaller the unit of work that is being calculated, the better chances of accuracy. So even in the work breakdown structure, we said be as precise as possible, be a perfectionist, ask as many questions as possible, break down your total goal into smaller goals. And that's where the decomposition of the major goal into the small sub-goals, and the sub-goals into work packages, and the work packages into activities would happen. So if you have all the details that are required, the details around the task to be performed, the details about the people who would be performing the task, the details about the resource availability, the details about the project scheduling, etc., etc. If you have all the details, that means you will arrive at an absolutely accurate estimate. For example, when estimating the implementation, say, efforts of a SAP, the SAP material management system for a mid-sized company, you kind of break this down into functional groups, say work group level, maybe divided into modules, and then arrive at the estimate. So what happens in this particular case is, as more and more details are unearthed, you would be in a better position to allocate the time and the cost. Also, we'll have a view on what is the skill set needed, are the skill set available in the market, or are the skill sets deployed in some other project. So then the resource allocation can also be prioritized. So the key here is to have as much detail as possible. This way, as the level of detail in each smaller work package is clear, the overall estimate accuracy will also significantly be more clear. So in this particular case, what is being said is that for every package, break it down into smaller, more deliverable packages, more deliverable modules, and then do the estimation so that the end result can be as accurate as possible. So let us look at this particular figure, and it's quite interesting. This figure shows three patterns, if you see, which reflect the pessimistic. Pessimistic is the worst case scenario. The optimistic, that is the best case scenario. And in between, you have between the pessimistic and the optimistic is a conservative figure, right? A more realistic estimate. So let's go and analyze all three scenarios. So this is the distribution of estimation rule. So this holds for every workplace, every work package. So there is a probability that an estimate can be either a pessimist or optimist, or it can be conservative. So conservative is something that is in between. In the figure, the pattern on the left shows pessimistic or the worst case scenario. So what are we assuming here? That in a worst case scenario, and if we draw this curve, there is a pessimistic approach saying that and if we reflect to the IT landscape, it shows a graph between minus 5 to plus 1. So this is a pessimistic approach. So the estimators here, they try to be as safe as possible, because there are multiple unknowns. They would want to buffer something in the estimates that they provide. So that's a pessimistic way of doing it. So in a worst case scenario, the estimate that is provided using this particular approach will still hold true. And the multiple assumptions are stated in this particular estimation exercise. In a more competitive scenario, estimates do not stand a chance of winning. So this is from the perspective that in a project bidding phase, right, that is where the software vendor has not been awarded the project yet. A very pessimistic approach of estimation might not give them the project. That is because using a very pessimistic approach, they would factor in all the risks, all the contingencies, and then factor in everything which would lead to a higher cost and a higher duration of the project. So it's important to not look only at a pessimistic approach, because in this case, the end result is that the software vendor does not win the project. Even if the project is won and the client agrees to such an estimate, and commits to key resources being put on the project, the fact of the matter is that because it is so sandbagged with all the risks, many project, many resources would be lying idle, and this would lead to loss of productivity and loss of opportunity cost. Why I say so is because if those resources, the key resources, maybe you would have sandbagged a lot of subject matter experts, a lot of domain consultants, a lot of functional consultants in that particular project, in the form that you have anticipated many hours or extra hours than it was actually needed, just to ensure that the costs don't exceed. But in such a scenario, you are actually looking at an opportunity loss that these resources could have been part of something that was more critical and was more important than remaining idle on this particular project because it was a lot sandbagged. The pattern on the right was absolutely optimistic or absolutely aggressive. Let me just take you to that particular slide again. Oops. Yeah. So this is where I'm trying to say that it was very optimistic. So on a scale, it starts from -1 to +5, which is absolutely as optimistic, or this is the best case scenario. Now, in a best case scenario, or the real aggressive estimation, coming to the same example, earlier, say in a pessimistic approach, if the estimators would have included, say, 100 hours of the domain consultants, sandbagged and taken into account the risks, etc., say in this case, they would have estimated, say, only 30 hours. Okay, just a wild guess. So estimators believe that this is an ideal working scenario, and assume that everything will fall in places. They would have obviously taken into account very minimal risk and very minimal contingency into the overall estimate. But they would have given a very aggressive estimate, maybe if the company is in a bidding phase, a very aggressive estimate would kind of make them win the contract. But when the project execution time really comes, then the entire estimate might fall apart. And just to summarize on that same example, right? Earlier, they estimated, say, 30 hours of the domain consultant. But during the project execution, they actually come to know that it shouldn't be 30 hours, it should be actually 60 hours. So then they are looking at a loss in revenue because they have to pay the salaries of these domain consultants as per the number of hours that they put. That means, although it was aggressive enough to win the company the contract, but then the profitability in turn takes a hit. So in this scenario, we are looking at projects that can be delayed because the resource was under provisioned, and it might require more number of resources that was anticipated, hence increasing the overall cost and maybe also increasing the timelines. Clients are also left unsatisfied as they see that the input costs are being spent, and hence the poor ROI. So we saw two approaches. One was a more pessimistic approach, which was absolutely sandbagged, all risk taken into account, and maybe over-provisioning of the resources was happened. And in the optimistic scenario, absolutely no risk taken into account, contingency not planned, resources under-provisioned, and this particular estimate was formed. However, you see a middle curve, which is between somewhere between optimistic and pessimistic approach, which is actually close to reality. And that's what really happens. Even in the real life scenario, you would create, say, a pessimistic approach and optimistic approach. And somewhere between the two is where the actual thing would lie. So where estimators have established has happened more or less expected as with little variance. So by gaining experience with various estimators over a period of time, it will be possible to fine-tune the estimates by guiding the estimators to fall within the middle curve rather than on the extreme side. So as I mentioned, it is good to look at the realistic picture, but more importantly, if you have the broad ranges between the optimistic approach and the pessimistic approach, in turn you would arrive at the middle approach, which is the more practical or the pragmatic approach, I would say.